Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi everyone, it's Mark here. Now, just before we start this week's episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Oladance. If you're looking for earbuds while riding, Oladance wearable stereo are the ones you need. The unique open ear design of Oladance allows you to listen to your favorite music when riding, yet still hear your surroundings to keep you safe. Now, what interested me is that unlike bone conduction headphones, their open ear design and multi-support design means your ears will never get tired or fatigued, even after 2 hours or more of listening. They also don't interfere with your helmet and glasses when you're putting on all your gear. Plus, the dynamic driver the earbuds use is 3 times bigger than most headphones, which allows them to deliver superior sound. The 16 hours long-lasting battery can last for your whole day. Just visit oladance.com/STW and use the code STW30 to save 20% on your purchase. That's oladance.com, oladance.com/STW and the code STW30. Get yours now.
Hello and welcome to this week's Single Track Podcast. Now, this one is going to be a little bit different. But before we get on to why it's different, I'm Hannah. With me is...
Faj.
Kevin. And in the virtual studio is...
Mark.
And...
Benji.
We managed that bit. What's going to be a bit different about this is we're going to talk about the weekend's downhill racing, and we're going to then try and get it out quickly. So Mark is going to not have as much time to edit as he usually does. We are going to try and not say or lots of swear words so that Mark has less editing to do. And but basically it might be a little bit more rough than what you're used to if you tune into our podcast regularly. So that's what we're going to do. Benji, we're going to start with you because
artisanal.
You were super excited about the racing. Did it live up to your fears and expectations?
Yeah, it was good. It was hard not to. I don't know what it would have been like if it was a crap race, but it wasn't, was it? So the racers did their part. I thought the filming, whatever you call it, footage, was as good, if not better than before. It's hard to tell. I think it just takes time. I think everyone thought it was probably going to be a lot worse. I don't think ESO did themselves any favours from anybody's front. Racers, public, teams, with the level of comms, shall we call it, between everyone. But thankfully it didn't go wrong. I think if it had not been good racing, I think there would have been hell to pay.
Okay, so that's a whetting of the appetite for anybody that hasn't watched it yet. And because it wasn't all free to view, that's possible.
I don't know when. Yeah, there's highlights and that's it. Yeah. There's like top three kind of runs on YouTube's, men's and women's. I think that's it so far.
So there will be spoilers in this conversation. So let's kind of break it down. First of all, let's talk about the format of the racing and the amount of viewing that was available to go with it. What did you think of that, Benji?
There's a lot of it, wasn't it? I just finished doing our non-spoiler word report that's just gone up on Monday morning-ish, saying from like, it started, well, given a real world, it started while I was at Olive's swimming class. So there you go, halfway through that. And then it got interrupted by having to unpack Lidl. And there we go. But I actually got to watch the finals. Just all right, fine. I think that's probably how it's going to be, really. I was a bit worried, like, the semi-finals were like, felt a little bit like the finals, and I wasn't really able to pay them all my attention I wanted to because of things going on at home, which I'm sure it's the same for a lot of people. But then it turned out that the finals were actually the finals, so it was all right.
Yeah, I felt like it was a lot of racing to be going on, and so it's not like the Tour de France where you can have it on in the background and then you hear a bit of like, oh, something's happening, and you look up and you catch up with what's going on. Like, you have to watch it. It's distracting. It sucks you in. And then how do you decide who's not worth watching? Like, how do you go, oh, well, you know, those juniors, they're not worth my time. They're not putting it down. Well, everyone's putting in just as much effort. So, yeah, it doesn't feel right to miss anyone in a way. But then it goes on for days and days.
Well, I think it's quite good because I think we're a bit concerned, like, you won't get... Well, let's say, who do we want to win their first one this year? Like, some freak result. It'd be nice if, like, I don't know, Suarez or Dakota Norton in the men's put a run together and won. They're not going to do that twice. He's not going to win the semis. But if he chose, in inverted commas, to go for it in the final, even if he didn't get anywhere in the semi, I think he would still be treated as the winner. So I think the freak winners will still happen and still be treated as such, even if they don't have as many points as Loris Vergier, who came second and fourth, like he always does.
So is it really the case? Because I was reading your report, your story this morning, Ben, and I did watch it, and I kind of thought I understood the whole points thing. But are you saying it's actually possible that somebody who doesn't win the final can actually come out of the race with more points than the winner of the final?
Yeah, it must be. I say it must be because the points have changed, so I might be thinking of old points. But what do you get? What's the biggest points you get? It's almost like I should have looked beforehand.
Yeah. Does the winner get 250 points? Is that?
Let's have a look. It's more about what points are now in the semis, and I can't honestly remember. Hang on. Everyone likes waiting for web pages to load on radio, don't they? Is that the best thing?
Well, while you're researching that.
So the semi-final, if you win it, you get 100.
Right.
So if you came second in the final, you get 310 points. If you came, well, it'd be difficult. But if you came like really low down because you punctured or something or just whatever, and you got like 5 points and then you won the final, you'd have 255. And 255 is less than 310. Maths.
What do you get for winning the final?
250.
250. So here's a scenario. You
it's unlikely,
you win the semis, but you come second in the final. How many points do you get?
You win the what?
You win the semis.
Yeah, 100.
And then you come second in the final.
310.
So altogether?
Yeah, 310.
310 altogether. Okay. Yeah. So you win the final, you get 250. The difference between that is.
If you win the final
60.
And came fifth, you wouldn't get as many points.
Right.
Or we get the same,
so
maybe?
Down. Down.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a lot worse, which is why they changed it, isn't it? Because it was like, oh my God, you could just be a good semi-finalist and win the whole thing.
But this picks up on something that Kevin was saying to me earlier, that he thinks that it's biased in favour of people that have a lot of support. So Kevin, why don't you talk about that?
Well, first of all, I want to talk about the important maths, which I think are that people get to watch so much more. There's just so much more coverage. Racers are going to do 2 runs in a single day, which means that they're going to be going faster, especially on their second run. They're going to be more familiar with the terrain and the terrain of the day. And so we're going to see times on the same courses as from previous years drop, I think. And in terms of the coverage, the junior coverage is really amazing. We've not had that coverage before. And I got to see Iris van Leeuwen race, yeah. And she was amazing. The second most natural woman athlete of the weekend, in my opinion, has a great future in front of her.
Was it her video that you found this morning, Ben?
Yeah.
Yes, I remember the name from somewhere. I thought, oh, she's New Zealand. Oh, yeah, it's that 10-year-old ragging around on a crappy old pink.
If you don't know what we're talking about, head to the Benji story on our website and he's embedded the video in there. But it's quite amazing. She was, how old was she when that video was? She was 10. And anyway, less about that. Just go and watch it. You'll be blown away. Back to Kevin. What were you saying, Kevin?
Well, and so some of the other math that I think does change the game a bit is the fact that you do have two race runs effectively in the same day, which will cut against the one-hit wonders because the turnaround time involved in preparing for two race runs. If you have a flat or a mechanical in your first one, it's going to be very difficult for you to flip that around into a winning run, even if it's a qualifying, even if it's enough to qualify as a privateer, especially. And I think that that's also the case, you know, for some of the more experienced folks. They don't have that extra bit of time to recover from a bad run, perhaps a crash. I think we saw that with, for instance, Valley Hole. She did the first 2/3 or maybe the first 2/5 of her race run at incredible pace, just absolutely amazing, and then backed off tremendously. And part of that was that she had crashed in the previous run and was looking at that same rock garden again. But the other part was, I bet she was pretty beat up and tired. And so to flip that kind of a thing around in the same day is going to be very difficult.
Even if it goes well, you've still got to be organized and have somebody, well, you're going to need somebody there with your flapjack and your bottle of water and just whatever else, like go for a wee, hold your bike while you go for a wee and stuff. And if you've got a team of people there doing that sort of hand holding for you, that's going to be way easier than if you've got your mum or your dad at the bottom with a carrier bag. And we've heard before from the sort of the people that don't have a team about how you don't get a pit spot in the same way. And so you've got a parking spot that's miles away from where the race actually ends. And so you've got all this like extra logistics and transfer time and stuff. And that's only going to be compounded by then having two runs in a day.
What was the timing difference between the end of the semis and the start of the finals?
Wasn't very long, was it? Because if you were watching,
between,
it was...
So yeah. If you were the last rider in the semis but came last, you'd be first up in the finals, or yeah, not last because you wouldn't be in the finals. But if you were the slowest finalist in the semis, you would be up first on the first run in the finals, and there would literally be what, an hour then between your runs. Like Kevin says, if you've got mechanicals to fix in that time, and you're a privateer, you're going to really struggle, aren't you?
Good.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's
good,
more
then?
Interesting, isn't it?
Well, you know what, I was thinking about this. Yeah, we could argue that, oh, this is too complicated, it's not fair, and this, that, and the other, and all the rest of it. But
they pay loads more money. The whole thing wouldn't happen without the big people with the massive trucks.
Mondraker weren't giving millions. The points thing just seems like, wow, we've gone all Formula One now. All these ways that points can make a difference.
My main point being that it's the whole thing, the whole World Cup. Well, we have world champs for one-offs. That's the one-off thing. Mm. World Cups is consistently the best racer, and I don't think Valley Hall is the best racer because she's so sketchy, and that shouldn't be rewarded for that, really. So yeah, she's going to crash more. Well, she needs to get a better racer and stay on her bike. It's racing, crashing.
I hear what you're
not
saying.
Not damaging your bike is racing.
I hear what you're saying, but it sounds kind of harsh, doesn't it?
Not really, because it's like you get people who are really consistent. The people who are really consistent just get forgotten about, don't they? I think that's why they've been the rejig, really. Like, I don't know. It's like it is a lot like sport, isn't it? It's like the good ones are boring a lot of the time, aren't they? But it doesn't stop the other ones being there. It's like we still have Phil Atwill doing absolutely nothing, but you still, he's the one you'd, hang on, I'm going to watch this one. If you're in the middle of doing something, I'll watch Phil Atwill. He will do absolutely nothing, but he's good to watch. He should win.
Yeah.
Because you're good to watch.
We still love you, Phil, if you're listening. Don't take that personally.
That's for sure he would. I think that's why he rides, isn't it?
So I think it depends on why you're watching and what you're watching. So when I'm watching, I enjoy a fast performance.
Yeah.
But I don't really enjoy watching Aaron Gwynn win because I can't see that he's really doing anything on a bike. He's just kind of hanging out there, floating along. Bike seems to be dancing along underneath him. It's all good. On the other hand, if I'm watching T-Bone, or I'm watching Valley, or I'm watching Finn, those people ride a bike like I want to ride a bike. And I am trying to code that in to my brain. And it's one of the reasons why I like to watch really good people ride, is because that's coding good stuff in. Mm. Whereas, for instance, crash videos are teaching you bad habits. But watching Valley ride a bike, or T-Bone ride a bike, or those folks really. Rach had a great weekend, by the way. I want to get to that eventually. She rode very well, a little differently than Valley did, but with a ton of control and composure. Mm. And that's another great way to ride a bike, and very exciting to watch. So that's what I'm doing. I think it's interesting that people will win or lose as a result of how they ride a bike. But I'm not going to be competing for world championships this year.
Danny Hart always impresses me visually when you watch him ride. He does ride really smooth and his lines are brilliant. And he also is I have an affinity with him because he's quite small and he looks like he's riding his dad's bike. I take Kevin's point there. You know, I think if you took the clock off and you watch some riders, you would actually put a whole bunch of riders down who you think are fastest who aren't, and it's just because of the way that they ride. They look smooth and they look fast, even though sometimes they might not actually be as fast as the winners. Yeah, it's cool.
I think the smaller riders are having a day. I mean, you look at Jackson Goldstone or Laurie Greenland, both of those riders, smaller riders, really riding very well. Mm. Finn's not a big guy. He's a little bigger, but he's not a big guy. So I think that in the men's class, at least, there are a lot of good examples of smaller riders who are navigating the train, you know, effectively for their body and shape and style of riding.
Shall we talk about Rachel? Is now the time? We've talked about the format.
Let's start with Rachel, and then we can talk about some other really good performances. Yeah.
I mean, what's there to say? Did anybody see that coming?
I could go really like hyperbolic about it. I think it might be one of the greatest, most important sporting performances ever.
Like, the Guardian ran a story on it this morning.
Really?
Yeah. And it was called The Fastest Mum.
Yes, but that's only like, that's part of it. But I mean, when she was last racing, she was kind of wrecked. She seemed burnt out and wrecked and broken.
She'd won last year, didn't she?
Last year, did she not go and like do a race? But she didn't.
She came sixth last year in something, I seem to recall, but I don't know. Yeah.
But that before was... that, like before she was, she well before COVID, basically, she was seemed like she was getting a bit burnt out, and she was really had a bunch of nasty injuries, and it looked like maybe the crashes were getting the better of her head, as well. And so the depth of competitiveness in the women's field was only really coming through as she was having this sort of burnout phase. So when she was first apparently in her prime, there was a lot of naysayers there was a lot of like, well, she's just so much better than everybody else because she's been riding with her brothers. She's had this advantage or whatever. Like, there was kind of like, well, she's winning because there's nobody else. And that was really unfair. And then as she was being injured and, you know, she ruptured her Achilles, all sorts of horrible things. Then some of these other riders were coming through and there was a much greater depth of field and much more competition in the women's field. And then it was COVID and then she had a baby. And now she's come back to a really strong women's field and everybody was in that race pretty much. And everybody got a good run. She didn't win because somebody crashed or somebody was injured. She won because she was the best there and she nailed it.
Her margin, her margin was smaller than it has been historically
yes.
in that field, which I think says to, you know, speaks to what you're saying about the fact that the field is now strong.
The field is strong, but she is still the strongest and she's come back after all that injury and effectively being older than a whole chunk of the field, and she's a mum and she's still breastfeeding. Like, I mean, so that's like the second part of why this is a hugely important thing for, I think not so much for Rachel, but for women's sport, is that there's this whole kind of misunderstanding about what women's bodies are capable of, and the effect that breastfeeding has on your body and continues to have for ages. And she's just showed the world that women are still super strong, super capable. We don't need to be put out to grass.
Do we think the pressure's now on her that she's going to turn up at Leogang? Because this was not the plan, was it?
No.
I want to get hyperbolic for one more second.
Go for it, Kevin.
Because I think there are a lot of good examples of women coming back into sport in aerobic activity. For instance, running, triathlon. However, what Rachel did was make Serena Williams the second greatest comeback post-pregnancy ever. And if you've made Serena Williams the second greatest, you've done quite a feat. And I would add that it was in a sport that is very demanding from a technical and body abuse standpoint. The running and triathlon, and no offense to tennis players, just do not have the injury potential, the catastrophic injury potential, and the constant battling against catastrophic injury that mountain biking does. And that has made her accomplishment totally above and beyond any other post-pregnancy comeback that I can locate. I'm sure that before people started writing down women's athletic accomplishments in the 1970s, there were lots of women who accomplished amazing things. But in the post-media era, this would seem to stand out as the most amazing.
Well, I think the pressure's on her now. This is unexpected. This was not part of the plan, so yeah. Will she be there at Leogang?
Yeah, I hope that she... I hope it's not a one-hit wonder. It would be nice to see her have a really good season. And I've heard her say before that you can't just be strong enough to race. You need to be strong enough to crash. And she did have a crash in practice. And I hope she is strong enough to crash, because she hasn't really had like a full training schedule. You know, she's not where she used to be in terms of training, which is kind of interesting, again, in the understanding of women's bodies and athleticism, like what measures are helpful and accurate and support good performance. Because, like, you know, some of the male-centric body fat measurements and all that kind of thing are clearly not relevant to women.
What pressure is on Rach? Like, she's in The Guardian. There's no pressure on her.
She's not retiring, is she? So.
You know who the pressure is on? All those other gals that need to beat her, including Valley, who crashed.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the other gals that need to keep up. She could walk away today, and everybody would think she was the most amazing person ever.
Well, maybe the pressure's not on her, but the pressure from other people saying, oh, you could win this whole season now. You've got to go ahead. You've got to be in all the... Go for the points, Rachel. Go for the... And that wasn't clearly that wasn't the plan. Or as far as we know, maybe it is. I don't know. Well, I kind of did feel sorry.
Genuine.
I kind of did feel sorry for the other riders, actually, in a funny kind of way, because I thought when she came in, they must have thought, oh, God, not again.
Yeah.
But they were brilliant, the actual camaraderie. At the finish line, when she came over that line, I thought it was really touching. Mm. I thought that was great. They all the racers came out to congratulate her, and they looked genuinely absolutely thrilled. And I thought that was a really good moment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hope she has a good season. I would hate to see her like crash and burn or end on a low after such an amazing achievement. Yeah. So.
Shall we move on to the men's? Because that was also in its way. If it wasn't for
Let me just say that the pressure is on Camille Blanche and on Nina Hoffman, because those two riders are so well supported, and yet they haven't quite grabbed the brass ring. And for them, there is a lot of pressure. For Valley, there's an infinite future, and she's wearing the rainbow stripes, whatever. It's those other riders that need to have that moment of success. And while they have all this support, everybody's looking at them.
Well, and so before we leave the rest of the women behind, I think Tani's performance, really nice to see Tani back on a bike, getting some clean runs in. I'd like to see her back racing as well and looking happy at it. That would be nice. Harriet Harnden is just, can I just be totally fangirly over her? Like, just every discipline, just out there performing, maybe not at the absolute pointy end of the DH, but still up there at world level. She's amazing. And I'm very curious about her bike fit, because it looked like she was on a tiny bike compared to her or something. There was something about it was strange, but...
There were a few mullets going on, I noticed, across the whole racing thing. We'll show it in. I think, moving on to the men's, I think that if it wasn't for Rachel, we'd still be coming out with all the hyperbolic statements about the winner of the men's, because that in itself, that's a hell of a story. What do you reckon, Benji?
Jordan Williams.
Yeah.
It was nice to, I don't know, it was really good to see Loic Bruni get it wrong. It was well good.
You are being so harsh.
It's so rare. Like, I just thought, well, Bruni is going to just ruin the whole day, isn't he? Because he's coming down last. He'll win. He always does. He'll look really slow and hunched over his stem. And he's always can do it when he needs to. But no, he didn't do it, did he? Messed up a couple of corners. And then,
so, Jordan.
Good.
Just for the listeners who won't be familiar with that name.
On the old bike.
What was so special about the fact that he won?
I don't think he's the first to do it. Well, he isn't the first to do it, but it was his first race as an elite grown-up. He was in juniors up until now. So it's his first time of having a go at winning, or not having a go at winning, first go at racing an elite World Cup.
And he won it.
Yeah.
That's the amazing feat here, is the fact that this was his first elite proper grown-up race. And he won it.
Grown-up race.
How much did he win it by? Let's have a look. Can't remember. But yeah, that was... I watched it a lot, actually. Not about half a second, which is quite fast, isn't it, at the sharp end.
I find that absolutely amazing, really. When you think about all the variables involved... I mean, this is a general point. When you think about all the variables involved in racing, from the bikes to the amount of air you've got, the shock setup, and the course itself, the variability of a course... that they ride for, what was it, you know, 2-3 minutes, and then the winners are separated by fractions of a second. I think that just speaks to the fact that those riders really are elite and good at what they do. They're a different class. But yeah, I mean, across the whole board, actually, I was, you know, from the women's race to the men's, the margins were tiny. I always find that remarkable. But yeah, so he won by about half a second, which is actually quite a massive margin when you look down the list and see the differences between the other riders. There's like hundredths of a second between some of them. So it's.
I think on the podium separated by a second.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really. But yeah, but Jordan Williams' run was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
What was the bike he was riding? It was this, it's team specialized.
It's the available current specialized demo, and these teammates Loic and Finn were on the one that's got things hidden.
But yeah. it wasn't a straight up demo.
It was a longer front, wasn't it? Yeah.
There were a few custom bikes I noticed in terms of the fact that, you know, these were bikes that are not available. Which is
I don't know what tyres he was on as well, but that's his first year on that bike. There's been a bike change in mid season as well. He used to be on Saracen, so he's not even been on a specialised that long. I don't know whether he was racing specialised rubber or not, because it's sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. Be interested, going to look at some pictures about that. But if to do it on new bike and new tyres,
it's so like predictable, Ben, that kind you of would work. Bring up tyres.
Well, yeah, the thing I was going to say about Rachel's result is it's another Continental. They're loving it, aren't they? Like, because they were from nowhere, and last year everyone swapped to there. Loads more teams on Continental this year, and they're doing quite well. And I think, I don't know, is it the first win for an Atherton bike? It feels like it's not, but I can't remember why it wouldn't be. Did Kolb? I don't know.
Kolb had a podium. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the first.
Well, Kolb had an incredible race.
Yeah.
You can talk about Williams, but Kolb was probably less likely going into the whole thing to win it, and he has been on the verge for quite a while. Very nice to see him up there at the top. And the Atherton bikes had a great weekend, really.
Which was the bike that has there was a custom like CNC'd lugs.
Saracen.
Pivot. No, it was the pivot.
Oh, pivot. Yeah.
It's not going to be made for
public.
That's
what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Two chains.
Yeah, it's quite unusual, isn't it? And well, certainly in cycling, because I think the UCI rules on non-mountain biking are that the bikes that are actually, for example, the bikes racing the Tour de France actually have to be available to the public. That's part of the rules, but doesn't carry over into mountain biking. They can be completely unobtainable bikes in mountain biking. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
And who was on the steel bike?
Yeah, there was a gal on the steel, what's the name of it? High pivot.
Does it begin with a B?
Steel is real.
Yeah. And then, not about the bike, but the junior men was won by Christian
Hauser.
And that was really nice to see, because that's the union team, which is a community interest company thing.
Steel City Media, isn't it?
Yeah, like, and specifically there to do youth development.
You won by a big margin as well, all things considered. I'm just checking here, it's like over nearly 2 seconds, which is remarkable. I'm just looking at the margins, actually, between them. I mean, remarkably, as we were saying before, the top three women, the margin between Rachel, Camille and Nina was less than a second. And that's fairly unheard of. In the women's racing, which is remarkable. So anyway, looking ahead, overall, what do we actually the commentary? What did we think of the commentary? It wasn't Warner, was it? Yeah. Mm. But what do we reckon? It was Cedric and Rick, wasn't it?
It's fine. It's fine. It's good. I mean, I don't know
what were you expecting?
I wonder whether I'm allowed to say this, but I don't know. Rob Warner's a bit one note, isn't he? So I know he's excited and stuff, but there's a point where you're excited for someone who's going to come 12th, and it just you got to ride a wave and pitch it, and it was just a bit too much. I'd been interested to know the person I missed most was Elliot Jackson, actually. I thought he was the best co-commentator in the Red Bull final flings last year and the year before.
Yeah, he has good race tactics insight, I think. Like he's good at telling you what the racers are likely to be thinking, which from my perspective, because I have no idea, I think that's quite useful and interesting.
I think I don't know. I think it'll take time to become. I mean, Rick's been doing some kind of voiceover and some kind of commentary for quite a while, so that was all right. And I think Cedric was a lot better than I thought he would be, and I think he'll get quite good, I think, Cedric, because I think a lot of people, I think he plays up to the wacky Frenchman thing and has done traditionally because that's his brand, isn't it? But I think when he stopped doing that and was actually realising he was getting engrossed and talking about it, it was all right, I thought. It was He was
Give him a score out of 10 for that first race. What do you reckon, Benji?
It's
what would
all you give right.
So I tell you what, there's no dead time. You talk for 6 hours, whatever the sod it was, for including training. It's ridiculous, isn't it? So
it's crazy,
The sheer keeping goingness.
To blow our own trumpet, though, I think if you want to know about commentary and how difficult it is and what's involved, you can't do worse than actually read our Rob Warner article in this latest issue. That opened a lot of it opened my eyes a lot to how difficult it actually must be to be a commentator. But there are some really good insights in that. So, listeners, make sure you go and get our latest issue of Single Track Magazine, issue 149, on sale now.
Or join up online and digitally and you can read it online because it's on the web now today. As well.
Yeah, indeed.
I would say that I thought the commentary team have yet to become a team. It felt like you were listening to two different streams of commentary. So one of them would be telling you something that was clearly like notes about history and facts and whatever. And then the other one would be like, oh, and they're at 2 seconds down. And then the other one would continue telling you that piece of history. And then the other one would just come in with something random. And they weren't listening to one another and like building on each other's commentary in a way. And I found that a bit difficult because sometimes the history thing was interesting and then you wanted to follow that, but it was quite complicated to follow it when it was being interrupted by some sort of live race action cliche or something. And then other times the history thing was really boring and annoying. Like, there was one, who is Aaron Gwynn's teammate that rode? Because Aaron Gwynn didn't ride, did he? Because he was crashed.
Seth Sherlock and Dakota Norton.
Dakota Norton. So half of Dakota Norton's run was spent talking about Aaron Gwynn and how much we missed him and we hoped he was better. And I felt that was a bit insulting to Dakota Norton. He's the one that's out there at the moment putting his limbs on the line. I don't really want to hear about other people that aren't there in the middle of a race run.
So I would say straight out of the gate,
this was a great effort that Claudio and
Rick.
No, the other commentator for Elliot Jackson, both took a whole season to come around to the level that Cedric was at yesterday. And I noticed during the course of the broadcast, it started with two of them talking in their own channels, but by the end, they had merged quite a bit more. And I think that bodes well to feature coverage, and I would give them an A for effort, but like a B minus for actual performance. So it gives them a lot of room to improve, which I'm sure will happen. It's very early.
And Cedric is not in his first language either. To be sharp enough to be doing commentary.
Where's Claudio?
How many of us could commentate in another language, to be fair? Or indeed in our own language.
There's an argument that Elliot Jackson's code shifting the whole time too. But that's a whole other story.
Right, finally, before we wrap this up. Technically, how did you watch it? I watched it because I discovered through, I think, Benji's research, actually, that being a BT internet customer, that I could log on to something that would activate another thing that would make my Apple TV show it. And it did.
Yeah.
Suddenly, I've now got Discovery Plus on my Apple TV.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. A lot of people were like sending me, sliding into my DMs about how to get around it. And that was our old mate, Mike Rose, who does stuff for intense PR and stuff. He said, I've realised you can do this. It's all right. Don't put my name on it in case they get upset. I tried to install it onto my smart TV and then realised I don't have a GCN app that I could find, which I thought, maybe it's my telly that couldn't find it. And then I just watched it on, I had it on the laptop.
So you've got a GCN Plus subscription for it?
Yeah, so and then the other thing we probably haven't talked about is I'm not talking about it like a paying customer either, so I don't know how I'd feel about it if I'd paid.
Yeah.
Seven
How
quid.
Did you watch it, Hannah?
I also got the Media Squid GCN subscription, and I watched some of it on my phone on their app, which I did not figure out how to have the app, the viewing running while doing other things on the phone. Okay. Like, you know, if you're on the Netflix app, you can watch Netflix while also checking Instagram, while also reading your email and that kind of thing, and you've got the image is there as well. I could only get it to have the sound in the background, so that was a little bit clunky, and I like that functionality. But yeah, that seemed to work okay. I also watched it on my laptop plugged into my TV because my TV is not smart, and that was all right, although it did glitch a few times. And then we watched it just on a laptop, and we watched it on the internet on an iPad in bed on a Sunday morning, which was just about the greatest way to start a Sunday.
Excellent. So to round up then, I want to get like a score out of 10 from everybody, but two scores, one for the racing and two for the coverage. So Hannah, out of 10 for the racing, what would you give it?
Oh, I'm going to give it a 9, just because there's got to be somewhere left to go, but that was, it was pretty damn good.
And yeah. The coverage?
Maybe like a 7.5?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. Cool. There did seem to be a lot of good camera angles. I thought there seemed to be more cameras on the track.
There was no blank spots, was there? I noticed that with the Red Bull in the past, there'd be like some part of the mountains that you didn't see.
Well, there were the odd bit, because who was it that crashed, like, almost immediately out the gate? And yeah, that was, like, the one time they didn't show that section.
I put that down to the fact that there's kind of an overlap between the... When you're doing it live, you know, it takes a three-minute run, but they're setting off riders maybe every 2 minutes. And so there's obviously going to be a part that you don't see, which is why I think they lengthen the start gaps when you get to, like, the top three or the top five. Mm-hmm. But cool. Anyway, Kevin, what do you reckon? Out of 10 for the racing...
Out of 10 for the racing, I would say an 8. I didn't think that the course was particularly interesting or in a condition that made it very challenging. It was a fun course, and it had some bike parky stuff, which I certainly would have enjoyed riding. But the rock section was pretty short, and... the speeds were very high. So that suggests to me not a real tough course.
The results were good.
Results, yep. I liked how the results worked out. Coverage, I would give it probably a 6.5 or 7.5. I don't think that they were using as high a quality cameras. The single drone that they did use was good, not great. They didn't have the same complex analysis with splits and such as we saw with the world champs at the end of the year last year. They had really stepped it up with Red Bull. I think that the announcing wasn't on par with where Red Bull had left it, but there's a lot of room for improvement there too. Very impressive for a first effort though.
Cool. Benji, out of 10 for the racing.
9.1.
And what about the coverage?
Depends what metric we're using. Are we using Red Bull as 10? Because they weren't amazing, were they, really? There was always like something going wrong or just something rubbish about every round. So as it, compared to, like, I don't know, someone who does stuff properly, BBC or something, I don't know. I don't know, 7?
Cool, right. I reckon the racing, I simply would give it a 9. I thought it was really, really exciting. Coverage-wise, I'd give it maybe... I'm thinking 7. I think we'd probably all agree that all the scores on the coverage are going to be trending upwards from here. I really missed the Red Bull ghost riding things like you alluded to there, Kevin. So when you could see that on certain sections you had the fastest rider and where they were on these dots, and you could see whether there was catching up or slowing down. Maybe they'll bring that in. I don't know. Yeah. And also, the drone pilot nearly took out a couple of riders. So I think they need to work on the drone footage. There's a couple of times where the drone overtook the riders, and that was, yeah. I was thinking, oh no.
Imagine that'd be really off-putting.
It must be. I reckon some of those riders could see that drone in their field of view, which I don't think would have helped them at all. Anyway, so there we go. Those are our scores there. I think we're all kind of in agreement, aren't we? So shall we wind it up? And
Let you go and edit it. Make sense of that.
Right, yeah. Let's rush this out.
Well, let's have some wild predictions about Leogang.
Well, I reckon Rachel will be there. My prediction is Rachel will be there. Yep. As to, and and I think she'll probably win. I have to say, I have ridden the Liegang course. I just dropped that in. Yeah, very carefully.
I can never remember them.
The Liegang course, for me, is notable. It starts in the trees, and then it gets steeper and steeper and steeper as you go down, and the steepest part is just before the finish. And so it's not one of these courses that sort of winds itself out into a nice pedally bit at the bottom. Right. It just goes ridiculously steep at the bottom. So totally different course to what we've just seen. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't have any wild predictions for it.
But... watch out for Goldstone.
That's your prediction, is it, Kevin? Cool.
I got to go for Hoffman and Vergier.
There we go. Those are our predictions, folks. And I think we should wrap it up there so I can get this thing edited and out. It's now 11:53. Let's see how long it takes me to put this out.
Okay. And thanks to all the listeners for bearing with our slightly shonkier than usual, even shonkier than usual version. Bye.
Bye.
Laters.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.